Bonsoir tous, this is London Calling and welcome to the Sounds of London.
A battle come down, London calling to the underworld. Come out of the cupboard, you boys and girls. London calling, now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania is bitten the dust. London calling, see we ain't got no swing. Except for the rain and the crunch of things. The ice is coming, the sun's zooming in. Meltdown expected, the wheat is going in. Engines stop running, but I have no fear. Cause London is drowning, I live by the river.
Good evening everyone and welcome to London Calling. Tonight my guest is Trevor Hills, who comes from London and lives in Cord. Welcome, Trevor.
Thank you, Ian.
Now, I think you're going to talk about your Cambridge days, is that correct?
Yes, I'd like to take you back to 1970 through to 1973 and play you a selection of the music that we listened to.
Sounds great. Let's start then. Where would you like to start?
I'd like to start with Where Do the Children Play by Cat Stevens.
Jumbo planes or taking a ride on a cosmic train. Switch on summer from a slot machine. Just get what you want to if you want, as you can get anything. I know we've come a long way. We're changing day to day. But tell me, where do the children play? Well, you roll on roads over fresh green grass. Your lorry loads pumping petrol gas, and you make them long and you make them tough, but they just go on and on, and it seems that you can't get off. Oh, I know we've come a long way. We're changing day to day, but tell me, where do the children play?
Stevens and Where Where Do the Children Play? From 1970, I think. Is that correct?
Yeah, Tea for the Tiller Man was the album, released in 1970.
Yeah. Any reason for picking that one?
Well, Cat Stevens had become quite a well-known pop singer and writer before that, with classics like I Love My Dog and The First Cut Is the Deepest.
Yeah.
Not exactly, you know, deep stuff, but just good popular music. Then apparently in 1969 he got tuberculosis very badly, close to death, and it changed his view of the world, and he started to write more serious songs, and that's when Tea for the Tiller Man was released. And it's actually got some, you know, quite meaningful lyrics, and he challenges, you know, war. We were in the middle of the Vietnam War at the time. Urban sprawl and ecological disaster, if you listen to those words carefully. So it was a bit of a revelation to hear Cat Stevens singing about serious stuff, but also quite good popular song at the same time.
It was a very political time, wasn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
Yep. Okay, what would you like? Let's move on. What's next?
Well, when Cat Stevens was, you know, becoming a more famous, known name in America as well, he went over to America in New York, and 1971-72 had a very close friendship with Carly Simon.
Ah, here's the link. Yeah.
Yes, and and her really famous song we used to listen to back then, it came out towards the end of my time at Cambridge, but one of the people that is rumoured to have figured in it is Cat Stevens, but more about that maybe after listening to You're So Vain.
Son of a gun.
Still quite naive when you said that we made
Simon, with a bit of Mick Jagger at the end, wasn't there?
Absolutely, yes. That was Mick there towards the end of that last part of the song. I think it's just a brilliant song in its own right, but it's also just amazing that over 40 years later, people still speculate on who it's about, and she helps that speculation. I'm sure that, I think that's she's got a good publicist who keeps her in the headlines. Yeah. Now, I think we've got to the point that everyone agrees now that at least the second verse is about Warren Beatty, even though he still thinks the whole thing's about him. And then there's a long, long list of who the first verse and the third verse might be about. The ones that interest me are Cat Stevens, because he liaised with Carly Simon. Yeah. Mick Jagger was singing on the song, and is it possibly about him? David Bowie's mentioned at times. Angie Bowie insists that she was the wife of a close friend in some book or other.
And what was Mick Jagger doing there?
Well, yeah, it's who knows? But I think he sounds quite good with her towards the end as well. And I'll go on to talk a bit about Mick Jagger, because he was born in the same town that I was, Dartford in Kent, in southeast England.
You're a Kentish lad.
Yeah. And I've never really been a great Stones fan. I find them sort of very loud and raucous and amazingly not that musical for the people who've been so incredibly successful. But I think he has got a good voice, Mick Jagger. I did see them perform in 2008 in Amsterdam, and he was already, I think, 70-something, but amazing amount of energy. And a great entertainer. But for me, the best songs from the Stones are the quieter ones, and I really love Angie.
Angie, when will those clouds all disappear? Remember all those nights we cried.
Rolling Stones. Hope you enjoyed that, Angie.
Yeah, fantastic. Dartford is a famous town for two reasons. One is, well, if it's one reason, it's Mick Jagger and Keith Richards were born there, so maybe that's two reasons. But the other really famous reason is it's where the M25 crosses the River Thames, about 50 kilometres out of the centre of London, first with a tunnel and then later with a big bridge. But I think Mick Jagger may have been noticed by more people around the world.
It's also the place where Vox amplifiers were invented. Do you know?
I didn't know that. Oh, I have
the
to add
Beatles
that.
And the Shadows and millions of artists since then, including myself, have got a Vox amp.
Excellent. I'll have to add that to my list of things that Dartford was famous for. Now, it's also got a railway station, which has got a blue plaque on it, which I was in Dartford a couple of years ago, and I saw this blue plaque on Platform 2, and it says it's where Mick Jagger and Keith Richards met before they went on to form the Rolling Stones, which is a bit of an odd plaque, really, and it really upset Bill Wyman, who was in the Stones once as well, because he said it rewrote history, and it rewrites it in two ways. One is that Mick Jagger and Keith Richards knew each other very well. They'd been at primary school together and were near neighbours. They'd known each other from babyhood through to the age of 11 when they went to different schools. And then they bumped into each other again on Dartford Station and started talking about music. Jagger was carrying a couple of blues records, or Richards was, one or the other. And it sparked a conversation about music, and they kind of got together and listened to the records, and and then bumped into a guy called Brian Jones, who persuaded them to form a group called the Rolling Stones. And Brian Jones doesn't figure on the plaque, and the plaque makes it sound like that's the first time they'd ever met.
Yeah.
So Bill Wyman really got on his high horse about that, and insisted that Dartford Council change the plaque.
Did they?
Which they've agreed to do, but still today, as far as I can tell, it's still the original, slightly misleading blue plaque. Go to Dartford Station and see the Rolling Stones blue plaque.
A bit of history. Okay, back to Cambridge then. Cambridge University, what else was going on at the time?
Well, as you said, it was a time of sort of great upheaval. There was the Vietnam War. We'd just gone through the Summer of Love and the Woodstock Music Festival, and everything was becoming freer.
Yeah.
Apart from at Cambridge, they were kind of stuck in a time warp. Cambridge is what they call a collegiate university. It's a group of 30-odd colleges, all in separate buildings in the town, affiliated to the university, and you actually join a college where you live and eat and sleep, and then you go to the university faculty for your lectures in your particular subject.
What was your subject?
Well, I did physics and maths to begin with, and then I was into anthropology for my part two by the time my hair had grown very long. The strange thing was that even in 1970, Cambridge colleges were all single-sex, and there were these really old-fashioned rules that in a male college, you could have a female visitor come to see you, but they had to leave the premises by 10 p.m. or 10:30, and they weren't allowed back in again until 9 o'clock the next morning. And woe betide you if you were found with a female guest at the wrong time. So rumour has it that people became quite good at climbing in and out of windows and scaling walls.
Up and down pipes, yeah.
We had lots of demonstrations at the time about these old-fashioned rules, and women who felt very strongly that the colleges should be open for women to join as well. And on one famous occasion, our formal hall, which is a place where you had dinner with your academic robes, it was men only, apart from on Thursday nights you were allowed to bring a female guest to dinner. So really, really strange old-fashioned rules. But the door burst open and about 50 chanting women came in and smashed all of the cutlery and broke the glass and assaulted the the waiters and you know, screamed.
Silver service, was it?
Yeah, it was. It was really strange place, but it caused such a furor that the police were there and the college was in lockdown for several days after that in case more women got in. It was terrible.
Okay, let's hear some music. What's next then?
Carole King was mainly a songwriter in the 60s and wrote things like, you know, Don't Bring Me Down by the Animals, which is a bit of a surprise. I'm Into Something Good by Herman's Hermits. The Locomotion, Little Eva, quite a collection of well-known songs. And then she started singing herself, and there was a famous song she'd written that was recorded by the Shirelles in the early 60s called Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow? And she included it in an album in 1971 called Tapestry. She had a subtle change of title and dropped the still from the title, Will You Love Me Tomorrow? But it was actually exactly the same song as the Shirelles, but sung rather more slowly and I think rather more nicely.
Thank you.
Morning and Will You Love Me Tomorrow. I nearly said, Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow? It's actually, Will You Love Me Tomorrow? Yeah. And so we're gradually getting an idea of those politically charged rocket scientist days of yours back in Cambridge University.
Yeah.
So what would you like next?
Well, in our quieter moments, when we weren't listening to Carole King, we were listening to Joni Mitchell. There's an album called Blue, which came out in 1971. I think my copy of it, we were still on vinyl in those days, remember, everybody? My copy of it got worn out, I think, because it just played so many times. But I'd like to play Little Green from Joni Mitchell's Blue album.
Born with the moon in Cancer, choose her a name she will answer to. Call her green, and the winters cannot fade her. Call her green for the children who've made her little green. Be a gypsy dancer. He went to California. He everything's warmer there. So you write him a letter and say her eyes are blue. He sends you a poem and she's lost to you. Little green, he's a non-conformer. Just a little green, like the color when the spring is born. There'll be crocuses to bring to school tomorrow. Just a little green, like the nights when the northern lights perform. There'll be icicles and birthday clothes, and sometimes there'll be sorrow. Child with a child pretending, weary of lies you are sending home. So you sign all the papers in the family name. You're sad and you're sorry, but you're not ashamed. A little green, have a happy ending. A little green, like the color when the spring is born. There'll be crocuses to bring to school tomorrow. Just a little green, like the nights when the northern lights perform. There'll be icicles and birthday clothes, and sometimes there'll be sorrow.
Joni Mitchell.
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, it's not obvious when you listen to that song what it's about. If you know what it's about, you can then, you know, make sense of the words she's singing. But it's a sad story in a way, but with a happy ending. She was a struggling folk singer in Toronto in 1965. Her boyfriend left her when she was pregnant. He went off to California. I think that's referenced in the song. And she had the baby and tried to bring it up, but just didn't have any money and couldn't go to work. She had a small baby at home, so she reluctantly decided to give the baby up for adoption, and still kept it a secret for another 2 years from her family. And she told them when that song was first published in 1967, I think, and then was added to the Blue album. Mm-hmm. And the happy ending is that 30 years later, she was reunited with her daughter. It's a too long a story to tell here, but they managed to get together and hit it off, and still today, I think, are very closely connected.
Touching story, though, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
Right, now. A bit more upbeat next one, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's surprising given that the topic of the song is about Buddy Holly dying in a plane crash. But it is, you know, unlike most of my selection, is a much more an upbeat song, which I think everybody will recognise. American Pie by Don McLean.
A long, long time ago, I can still remember how that music used to make me smile. And I knew if I had my chance that I could make those people dance, and maybe they'd be happy for a while. But February made me shiver with every paper I'd deliver. Bad news on the doorstep, I couldn't take one more step. I can't remember if I cried when I read about his widowed bride, but something touched me deep inside the day the music died. So bye bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. And them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, "This'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die." Did you write the book of love, and do you have faith in God above? If the Bible tells you so, do you believe in rock and roll? Can music save your mortal soul? And can you teach me how to dance real slow? Him, 'cause I saw you dancing in the gym. You both kicked off your shoes. Man, I dig those rhythm and blues. I was a lonely teenage bronc and buck with a pink carnation and a pickup truck. But I knew I was out of luck the day the music died. I started singing by American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye and singing, "This'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die." Now for 10 years we've been on our own, and moss grows fat on a rolling stone. But that's not how it used to be. Jester sang for the king and queen in a coat he borrowed from James Dean, and a voice that came from you and me. Oh, and while the king was looking down, the jester stole his thorny crown. The courtroom was adjourned. In the park, and we sang dirges in the dark. The day the music died, we were singing bye bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye and singing, "This'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die."
American Pie, Part 1 by Don McLean.
Don McLean.
Yes, what a great sing-along. What a party song.
Yeah.
What were those beers we used to drink back in the early 70s? Those
Newcastle
tins.
Brown.
Yeah, and there was tins, those tins. But do you remember those big tins of beer? Party Sevens.
Party Sevens,
yeah. Do you remember them?
Yeah. They were made by Watneys, I think, and they yeah. weren't allowed to say that word by 1970, I think.
Yes, didn't have a good reputation.
No.
Okay, let's move on.
Okay, so Van Morrison came out with an album in the late 60s called Astral Weeks. And by the 70s, we were playing this every night when the bar closed and the women had been kicked out of the college. The music from Astral Weeks would be bouncing around the corridors. And there's one track in particular which really, for me, sums up Cambridge, and that's called Madame George.
Down in Cypress Avenue, with a childlike vision slipping into view, the click and clacking of the high heel shoe, Bud and Fitzroy, Madame George, marching with the soldier boy behind. He's much older now with hat on, drinking wine, and the smell of sweet perfume comes drifting through the cool night breeze like Shalimar. And then your self-control lets go. Suddenly you're up against the bathroom door. The hallway lights out front are getting dim. You're in the front room touching him. And outside they're making all the stops. Kids out in the street collecting bottle tops. Gone for cigarettes and matches to the shop. A happy taking of Madame George. Ah, that's when you'll fall. Ah, that's when you'll fall. On a sofa playing games of chess, with your folded arms and history books, you glance into the eyes of Madame George, and you think you find a bag. You're getting weaker and your knees begin to sag. In the corner, playing dominoes and drag, the one and only Madame George. And outside, the frosty window wraps. Says be cool, be cool, I think that it's a cop. Stands up, drops everything she got. It's not easy now, you know. Ah, now she says you gotta go, gotta go. Catch a train from Dublin up to Sandy Road. In the winter rain and fog and such and snow. Keep on going. We know you're pretty far out. Yeah, yeah. All the little boys coming round, they got gold cigarette lighters in their pockets, walking away from it all. So cool, so cool, so cool.
That's
Morrison and Madame George, a live version, of course.
Yeah, it sounds a little bit different from the studio-produced version on the album, but still pretty good. Still sounded like he was having quite a lot of fun there.
Nice bit of guitar in there, could you hear
it? Yeah, excellent, yeah.
And you were saying that sums up Cambridge University for you, does it?
Somewhere? Yes, particularly the period between 1 a.m. and 4 a.m. in the morning.
Oh, I see where you're coming from. Yeah. It's that type of music.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think even more summing up my time at Cambridge, we move on to the late, great Leonard Cohen. It's stayed with me ever since then. I didn't know him until I went to Cambridge and a friend of mine bought Songs from a Room by Leonard Cohen and listened to it and thought it was great, and I still do. I know lots of people find Leonard Cohen a little bit somber and difficult, but I think you can tell that he started out as a poet. And his songs, even the words, stand alone as good poetry. And I don't get depression listening to Leonard Cohen. I get the opposite. I find it uplifting. And he had quite an amazing life and did lots of weird and wonderful and very successful things. Sorry to see him go, but I still love listening to his music. And this is one of his classics, Bird on the Wire.
Like a bird on the wire, like a drunk in a midnight choir, I have tried in my way to be free. Like the worm on a hook, like a night from some old fashioned, I have saved all my ribbons for thee. If I have been unkind, I hope that you can just let it go by. With his horn, I have torn everyone who reached out for me. But I swear by this song and by all that I have done wrong, I will not ask for so much. And a pretty woman leaning in her darkened door, she cried to me, hey, why not ask?
Cohen, Bird on the Wire.
Yep. I saw him live in London in 2009. He was in his mid-70s. He did that one, amongst others. And It was absolutely fantastic. I don't get it when people say he's depressing, but I guess he does sound a little bit like he's in pain, so maybe I understand, really.
It sounded a bit like my way. I did it my way.
He certainly had his way of doing things, there's no doubt about that. He started touring the world again in his 70s because he got ripped off rather badly by his business manager. And I don't know if everyone knows this story already, but he, apart from being quite a very religious Jewish person, he stayed attached to the same synagogue in Montreal all his life. He saw that was compatible with being a Zen Buddhist, and he went into a Buddhist monastery for something like 5 years to contemplate. And he said that because there was no deity involved and no prayer, there wasn't a contradiction with his Jewish faith. But while he was in there, his business manager got hold of all his money in his bank accounts and ran off with it. So he came out, found himself almost penniless. So he said, I know what I'll do. I'll start singing again and earn some money.
Back to work.
Yep. And he was very successful at it.
Okay, let's move on to something completely different. Something very famous anyway.
Yeah. So in my second year, I was sharing lodgings. You had to have 1 year out of college, so a room in college for years one and three. Second year, I was in this old Victorian house on the outskirts of Cambridge, sharing with another student who had all the Led Zeppelin albums, and he played them quite loudly, much to the annoyance of the landlord. And then when the fourth one came out, I actually found a track which I thought was wonderful. And I guess it's because it has quieter bits, and you may get the message now. I like the quiet acoustic parts of songs. I know this one builds up at the end, but all the heavy stuff wasn't really my scene, but Stairway to Heaven is.
There's a lady who's sure all that glitters is gold, and she's buying the stairway. When she gets there, she knows if the stores are all closed. With a word, she can get what she came for. Ooh, and she's buying a stairway. There's a sign on the wall, but she wants to be sure, 'cause you know sometimes words have two meanings. In a tree by the brook, there's a songbird who sings. Sometimes all of our thoughts are misguided. A new day will dawn.
who stand alone, and the forests will echo with laughter.
Fantastic track. Yeah. Everybody has their own favourite part.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're running out of time. Last one. What would you like next? So
just have to finish off with Leonard Cohen. He was quite a womaniser, Leonard, despite his Zen Buddhism and all that kind of stuff. He's got a whole list behind him, but while he was still a writer, he was on a small Greek island for inspiration to write poetry and novels. And he happened to see the most beautiful woman he'd ever seen, a Norwegian woman called Marianne Illen. And Leonard's luck was in because her husband had just run off, leaving her with something like a three-month-old baby.
Yeah.
And he saw her coming out of a shop and said, would you like to join me? I'm just sitting outside this cafe. And she did. And they stayed together for a long, long time. And I think she moved with him back to Canada. They eventually drifted apart. He wrote this song, I think, after they'd separated. Hopefully it was. She thinks he may have already written it before she knew they were separating. But anyway, so long, Marianne.
Just to say many thanks for your program, for sharing your days at Cambridge University. Obviously a very privileged and beautiful environment as well, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Yes. Fantastic buildings.
I hope the show brought back some nice memories for you.
It did. It took me back to those 3 wonderful years as an undergraduate in Cambridge.
Excellent. Well, thanks again, and thanks everybody for listening. A la prochaine.
Thank you, Ian.
Get to pray for us. So long, Marianne. It's time that we began to laugh and cry and cry and laugh about it all again. We met when we were almost young, deep in the green lilac park. You held on to me like I was a crucifix, as we went kneeling through the dark. So long, Marianne, time we began to laugh and cry and cry and laugh about it all again. Your letters, they all say that you're beside me now. Then why do I feel alone? I'm standing on a ledge, and your fine spider web is fastening my ankle to a stone. Now so long, Marianne, it's time that we begin. Hidden love, I'm cold as a new razor blade. You left when I told you I was curious. I never said that I was brave. Oh, so long. And laugh about it all. Oh, you are really such a pretty one. I see you've gone and changed your name again. And just when I climb this whole mountainside to wash my eyelids in the rain, oh, so long.